Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Coming up, we'll have Jason Puckett from KJR in Seattle. He'll be joining us to talk about what's going on in his world. I join his show on KJR about once a week and really enjoy doing it. And we were just going to do it for the college football season, but we decided, like, you know what, why not? Let's keep it going. He's also a dad, which I find interesting. He also, besides hosting the show to 10 to 1 p.m. on KJR, is a pretty good follow on Twitter as well. You can follow him at JasonPuckett20. And he works with Softy. So, you know, he's got patience. And you know that he is somebody ultimately who can navigate that world as well. But yesterday we were talking on his show about sort of the defensive coordinator searches within the Pac-12 conference. And we were talking about the different coordinators that are available that are out there. And we were also talking about whether or not Oregon and Washington, you know, do you have to hire a different kind of coordinator if you're the Ducks versus the Huskies? I think Jimmy Lake at Washington's got a lot of questions to answer. I think it's going to be really interesting to kind of see what Jimmy Lake decides to do when it comes to making this hire for his defensive coordinator. And I'm still not quite sold on him as a head coach. Like, we saw it at Oregon, did we not? We saw Mark Helfrich, who was a pretty good play caller and a good offensive coordinator and a good quarterback coach. And he ended up being a guy as a head coach who just frankly could not get it done on a consistent basis and did not, for whatever reason, pan out as a head coach. I frankly just think there are some personalities that are better suited to be a coordinator than being a head coach. And we know that. We've seen this. But Mark Helfrich was a shining example. I think the sample size in Jimmy Lake is too small. I don't know enough about Jimmy Lake as like the CEO of a program yet to say whether or not he is going to be a good head coach or not. But I'm certainly looking at now what he has to do in bringing in a defensive coordinator and hiring a D coordinator that is going to work under a head coach that has a defensive mentality. I think it's a tricky thing for a head coach, especially a head coach who's learning how to be a head coach. And I go back, and I got to be honest, I go back and look at Mark Helfrich's tenure, and I wonder what he could have done differently. What could have Mark Helfrich have done differently? And I think one of the big misfires in that Helfrich era, you know, Don Pelham was a really good position coach, coaching the linebackers. Good guy, like Don Pelham, not a coordinator. The loss of Nick Aliotti, when Nick Aliotti retired after that Alamo Bowl, killed Mark Helfrich in part because he never really replaced that defensive coordinator, and it was so important to him. All right, joining us now on the hotline, Jason Puckett. You can catch him on KJR, 10 to 1 p.m. in Seattle, on Twitter as well, at JasonPuckett20, man of the world. He's got kids. He's in the world. How are things in your world?
Good. Yeah, I had to screw around to the house today. I got no cell phone coverage here. You know, homeschooling's going well. We've got, you know, wife on, you know, her meeting. So I'm sure they're going to love me just yelling into the phone. But you know what? I'm here to entertain.
Let's talk about the coordinators.
Everyone's in the same boat.
I know. Literally, while you're talking, my kids are like 4 feet outside the door, and I'm just praying that the door doesn't burst open, and they start like interrupting
dogs
on air.
You know what? Do you have dogs?
Yes.
Yes, I don't, did they ever bark? Like, I could never. I don't do the show from home. I go in the studio, but I could never do the show from home because our dog, she's a lab, sits at our front window and barks at every person that walks by. It'd be terrible. You'd hear her every 30 seconds.
I'm sure that my listeners have heard our dogs at different points. Somebody knocks on the door, the dogs go crazy. Puck, let me ask you, you know, you've got Pete Kwiatkowski who leaves Washington. How big of a surprise was that for Husky fans, and how big a story was that in your world?
Yeah, I think people were surprised just because I don't think you saw it at all, the writing on the wall, and, you know, him wanting to leave. As best I know, there's no connection between him and Steve Sarkisian, other than they both coached, you know, at Washington, but they don't cross over in terms of their, you know, coaching tree, because Kwiatkowski has been a guy that's been with Peterson the whole time. And, you know, I think that, you know, $1.1 million, what he was making, you know, in Seattle, I mean, that's, you know, that's a lot of money, even for, you know, living in the, you know, a West Coast city like Seattle. But, you know, I thought that, you know, people didn't see that on the radar, but it's a different game. You know, Texas in athletics is in a different ball game than even Washington or other schools in the Pac-12. They can just offer so much more money. So, you know, what did they offer him? Maybe close to $2 million, $1.8 million. I mean, there's not a lot of people that can turn that down. And I think the allure of going and, you know, and coaching at a school like Texas, where I think probably some coaches in this conference get a little frustrated by, you know, the conference and maybe some of the schools, maybe unfair to the schools, but the conference that football isn't everything. Well, I mean, you know, in the Big 12 and the Texas, football is everything. I also do think the other side of this story is, you know, he was, before, you know, Jimmy Lake got the head coach, you know, he had to give a little control over to Jimmy Lake to be the co-defensive coordinator, you know, in order not to lose Jimmy Lake. And he was the primary defensive coordinator for the first 4 years. I guarantee there's a little bit of him wanting to go to a different program to where he can say, this is just my defense. Because, you know, you ask any Husky fan up here, you know, in the last 8 years they've had success, most people will point towards Jimmy Lake and not Pete.
Are Husky fans nervous about what they saw this season, the transition from Peterson, or are they pretty, you know, are they pretty sure that or confident that this thing's going to be okay in the end?
I think they're confident the way that things can go in the end. I mean, I think there's still some probably nervous fans out there about the offense. You know, I think that they look at that offense and they're wondering, is this the right offense for college football in 2021? You know, in terms of, can you win consistently like this? You know, I think there's some red flags probably still. You know, I think, you know, how they competed against, you know, Oregon State, I think, and that's not to knock Oregon State, but, you know, I think the way that, you know, and the games that they lost, I mean, I just think that they lost in the same type of formula that they've lost in the past, and that is, if you get a team that's committed to running the football at you and pound it at you, you can beat Washington. It's really weird. I mean, of all the great, you know, teams they've had defensively, their kryptonite is running the ball at them. You know, they are good at stopping the pass, and most teams, you know, in this conference, they love to throw the ball. I mean, they're not unlike anybody else in college football. But if you really line up and say, we're just going to run the ball at you, they just have had their issues with that. And, you know, I think with the offense, too, it's you know, I think there's some things to like. I think the quarterback was fine, but I think everyone's expecting here Morris not to be the guy. They're all waiting for, you know, the incoming freshman Sam here to take over. And then the wide receivers, you know, it just continues to be the same thing here in the last few years, that they get all these high-profile kids, you know, 3-4-star kids, some 5-star kids, and then they don't turn into anything. They're not any good. So I don't think people are dissatisfied, John. I do think still the jury's still out just because they didn't have a real season. You got to wait till next year. Hopefully we get a real season, you know, with the crowds and all that, and you get a full off season to see how he does.
How did Oregon's win in the Pac-12 title game fly up there?
Well, I work with a guy who's an Oregon fan, and he said he wasn't going to buy an Oregon championship t-shirt, and then he bought one. you know, it went over exactly how you thought it was going to go over. I mean, you know, it just, they rubbed him the wrong way. They didn't earn it, right? They didn't get to earn it, you know, on the field. But, you know, well, my counter to that one for Husky fans would be, well, if you would have gotten in there, not having played Oregon, you didn't earn it. I mean, no one earned it. I mean, it was just, you and I have talked about this before. you know, up on my show, it's just, it didn't mean anything. No one really won a championship because you didn't play everyone. And the schedule was benefited certain teams over others. And there was disadvantages all over the place. So I think there were people that laughed that they wanted, you know, there was a mentality here, you know, if Washington could have played in the game, they would have murdered Oregon, and then they would have murdered USC. I mean, but that's just the, you know, that's just the arrogance of that fan base. I mean, it's very, I mean, again, I'm a Cougar fan. The two fan bases of the Ducks and the Huskies are the same. When they look at each other, they're looking in a mirror. They're the same fan base. Neither of them want to ever admit it, but they are. And so I think that's where the animosity, and it's a great thing. I mean, that's the animosity between the two programs, but I think they scoffed at it up here for sure.
We're talking to Jason Puckett, KJR, host 10 to 1 p.m. there in Seattle. You mentioned Washington State. How are you feeling about Rolo?
I mean, again, that's another one that kind of the jury's still out just because this year was, you know, a throwaway season, like kind of spring football. But I think positive. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, the last game was the worst thing that could have ever happened to them, but I think they just ran out of gas and ran out of bodies. But you never want to end a season like that where you're looks like you're going to run away with a win at Utah and then you just completely collapse in the second half. And but I think, yeah, I think the early returns are good. You know, I like his player coach kind of mentality. That's obviously very different than what Mike Leach was. You know, and that's not to take anything away from Leach. I mean, he was highly successful, but he was never a guy like on senior day is going to put his arm around a kid and be like, man, glad that you spent 4 years here. I mean, Leach wouldn't even know these guys' names. You know, that's just not his mentality. So, you know, I think he's got a good foundation. It's hard on him because of the recruiting and then the pandemic hit and all of that. I mean, he has had one of the most difficult jobs in America, him taking over the time that he did. But, you know, the good news this year is that he got Max Borgi to come back for next year. Abraham Lucas, who was, you know, he's a second-round guy and maybe could, you know, second, third-round guy in terms of tackle. He's coming back. So I think that he didn't have a full offseason. I'm curious to see when they do have a more of an offseason, like how much of the offense can he put in. I just think that they didn't have enough bodies, and they just got tired as the season wore on. They were not the same team that beat Oregon State in the beginning of the season because attrition just hit them, and then, you know, they're trying to play games with 48 guys, and that's just not going to work.
I think the Pac-12 could put you and I in charge of figuring out what their brand is, and no matter what we did, it would be better than what it currently is. Like, we, you know, the brand of the Pac-12 is broken. Nationally, people look at the Pac-12 and you know what they say. But what do you think the biggest short-term fix could be for this conference? What's the move they can make in the next 4 months that might help?
I mean, like, other than just firing Larry Scott?
Well, that would be the start, but that's what I would do. But what else is,
yeah,
what's,
I mean, I think
what's
at
stake
yeah,
here?
I think that's everything. I think, yeah, I think you fire Larry Scott. That's a great question. What could they? You got to get someone in place there that I think bleeds the Pac-12. You know, actually, backtrack. Bleeds the Pac-10. Someone that has a connection to that conference and the history of the conference. That when the Rose Bowl makes a decision that we're going to move the game and it's up to the Terman Rose, they can do what they want. That the commissioner of the conference steps up to a podium and blasts them, you know, and puts out a statement that is critical of them. And you know, hopefully you don't sever ties about it, come to that. But someone who's forcible and, you know, has a passion, I think, for the conference. I mean, when I'm 45. Growing up, the Pac-10 was everything. It was the Pac-10 and Big Ten. Those were the two best conferences. And it's amazing. I think people who are younger than us would never realize that now. The SEC, when I was growing up, that was an afterthought. They are not what they are now. They are not this juggernaut of a conference that they are. You know, they have got to, and this probably comes in, you know, along the lines of a new commissioner, but they've got to figure out a new distribution television wise. They have, they've just got to make football important. I mean, celebrate the other sports as well. And I think they do a great job of celebrating the Olympic sports and the women's sports. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have an 11-year-old gymnastics crazed daughter. Now I watch the Pac-12 networks to watch gymnastics when they're on, but they have got to make football more of a priority and just understand and take a little bit of that SEC and Big Ten DNA with him and mentality, because that's what stirs the whole thing. I just, you know, they need a more an importance on football, and I hope at some point they just come to that realization.
We're talking to Jason Puckett, KJR, in Seattle. What I like about your show is, you know, you've got this Washington State slant. Like, that's your team. Your co-host is an Oregon person. You got Softy railing for the Huskies. I mean, you have a real diversity of rooting interests. How do you guys get along? And is Softy as nutty to work with as I suspect he might be?
Are you crazy? I mean, yeah. I mean, when you guys get there, when you have him on, what you hear on the radio, that's him. I mean, that's 24/7. There really is no off button to him. I mean, we joke. I mean, he's our little wind-up doll. We wind him up. I like to sit there and egg him on and wind him up. I know what buttons push him. That gets him going. Yeah, I mean, he is that circus animal. You just kind of throw peanuts at him, and he goes. And you know what gets him going? There's no off button with him. We get along well. I mean, all of us together. It's a great thing to have, because everyone's got their own little rivalries. Like my co-host, Matt, he's an Oregon fan, Wazoo, Oregon. That's kind of a thing a little bit. But I like to sit in the middle when it's Oregon and Washington and just poke both of them, because then they both hate each other, and that's great. And then the Washington Wazoo one's a great one. Now, I can't say anything. I mean, I continue to talk, but we lose every year. But it's whatever. I don't stop talking. It's just, you know, hopefully one of these years we can win the damn game. It'd be nice to have at least one year where we're not losing. But, yeah, it's great diversity. Got to have it. You got to have diversity in the workplace, John, especially fan rooting, fan interest. It's good for you.
I think it's interesting, too, because I feel like Nick Rolovich has the right kind of attitude. He's got kind of an edge to him that I like. And I see some vulnerability at Washington. Does it feel hopeful for Washington State fans that Apple Cup drought could end?
You got it. You know what? I hope so. You know, and, you know, it just comes back to, man, when they play the game, you know, are they going to run the bleeping ball? Because I'm telling you, if they go in with that same stupid mentality of not wanting to run the ball when they play them, then they'll lose again. And I hope he's committed to running the ball more. You know, I guess you asked me earlier, there's one little thing that I saw, and it's probably a little bit unfair because they didn't have Borgie the entire season, you know, and they're depending really on one guy. So I'm curious, will they run the ball a little bit more next season when they have healthier running backs? Because they only had one guy this year. Deion McIntosh was like their only guy. But the results will not change unless they commit to, you know, running the football against them, especially when they get inside the 20-yard line. But, you know, I think in terms of, is there any vulnerability? I guess the unknown isn't, you got to wait until they play the game and to see whether or not his adjustments will work. I'll say this about Rolovich. I guarantee he'll be able to adjust and will adjust when they play that game. I think you saw it at moments of this year when they played against other opponents, that if it's not working or he sees something, he being a former quarterback, he'll see it and he'll say, well, let's go to this. Let's run this play. He won't be as stubborn as Mike Leach, but yeah, they got to get over it. I mean, it's a physical, but it's also a mental roadblock for them to get past Washington for sure.
Pete Carroll's USC teams were scary. I mean, they just were so talented. They were scary. I don't find that fear factor in the Pac-12 right now, but who's the scariest? Who's the scariest sleeping giant in this conference?
Ooh, sleeping giant. Man, I will always say from the longest period of time, it always feels like it's Arizona State being the sleeping giant. I've just never understood it. I've never understood why they aren't more dominant, and maybe Edwards finally has them on the right track. You know, they kind of were disappointing in a way this year, but again, it's hard to evaluate anyone this year. I mean, such a plethora of talent that they can pull from. I mean, Arizona's not like a hotbed, but they produce good talent. They're right there by Texas, and then they can just dip right into California. And I think that NFL model, I just think that that's the one team that I always go back to, that why is it not more dominant? Because I think it has a chance to be dominant. I don't think USC will ever be dominant under Clay Helton. I just think he's such a zero as a head coach. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's running an offense that is just embarrassing at USC to run. And listen, I love the air raid because it worked at schools like Washington State. It works there when you have you don't have enough talent. You need a kind of a scheme or a gimmick, I guess, to try and win games. You don't at USC. Line up under center in an eye, in a one back, and run the ball down, you know, down the throat of people. And they, you know, so Arizona State would be, I guess, my team that I would look at. You know, they're going to return the quarterback again. And I just think that they're kind of built for it. And I like the – I didn't like the Edwards-Hire initially. I didn't think it was going to work. But, you know, I think you surround, you know, those kids with NFL guys. They make it like an NFL program. I guess that would be the one. I've always wanted it to be Utah, John. But there's just something about Kyle Whittingham. I don't know what it is. You get these big moments, big games, and it just – it doesn't materialize.
Jason Puckett, KJR. Follow him on Twitter, at JasonPuckett20. Appreciate you, man. Go take care of your kids. Have some fun today.
You're the best. Thank you, man. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Johnny.
All right. There he is, Jason Puckett. I love his show because of the it's very free-flowing. He and his co-host, one of them advocating for Washington State, one of them advocating for Oregon. It's just a different twist on kind of the Seattle sports radio show. All right, leave it here. Our Culligan Water Cooler Report coming up next. We're going to talk about the stadium experience. I can remember being a kid, and I'll be honest with you, this doesn't have anything to do with the stadium, but coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, we'll talk about the stadium experience, what you missed. But this is how my brain works. I immediately went from the stadium experience to thinking about my dad in a split second, just like that. Boom. Snap of the fingers. And I can remember, I think the origin of this radio show wasn't necessarily... you know, 13, 14 years ago in a Labor Day weekend that the show debuted. And for our very first show, we had Peter Jacobson as the very first guest. And then President Obama was our second guest that day. But I remember people saying, well, that was the beginning of the show. And I go, no. The show started long before that. And it is the subject of the Culligan Water Cooler Report.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
So you can say there are a lot of benchmarks for when this radio show made its debut. Some people like to say that this show started after the 2007 NBA draft. Blazers drafted Greg Oden. Remember that? Microfracture came later. Missed the season in 07-08. All of that happened. But it really wasn't that. Yeah, yes. Having Greg Oden and the Blazers have the number one pick forced or encouraged a radio station to flip from hip-hop format to a sports station. That's why you've got multiple sports stations in our market. And they called me up and said, do you want to host a radio show? And I said, yeah. You know, I had already been making... regular appearances on another show, and then they said, well, we need you to get some reps, and then they stashed me over on our sister station, FM News 101. I did a show at night from 6 to 8 p.m., but that's not the real origin of this radio show. The origin of this radio show goes back years and years and years before it. I'll talk about it coming up on the other side of the break, but it is the subject of the Culligan Water Cooler Report. I want you to go to culliganoforegon.com. If you are interested in having your water tested, and you should be, we did it. Culligan.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.